Good morning.
And we're talking to all of you. We've got a really, really cool show today.
We do.
We're going to have, I mean, if New York can get it together, we're going to have Lawrence O'Donnell Jr. on the show from Hawaii. And for those of you who don't know, I call Lawrence O'Donnell Jr., which is a lot to say. I call him LOD. I'm the only one that calls him LOD, but I do. And he is in Hawaii writing West Wing. And that's where they go. I guess when shows die, that's where they go. And he is a real politico. You know, he used to be the right-hand man to Moynihan. And he was in the Clinton White House a lot. And he is an insider in D.C., knows all about this. He wants to talk about, we'll talk about our friend Kiki Friedman running for governor. We'll talk about cartoons. We'll talk about Hawaii and the Wahinis over there. We'll talk about Cheney and shooting. And,
Wahinis?
Yeah. It means pineapple.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
It means pineapple.
I didn't speak Hawaiian.
No, it does. I speak fluent Hawaiian.
I had no idea.
Remember we did Sin City Spectacular?
Yes, we did.
I sang, I did the Long Pig Luau.
Yes.
Long Pig, for those of you who don't know, I don't know if we want to get into this on the phones, but Long Pig is the literal translation of cannibal word for eating humans.
Oh, okay.
Long Pig, because it has longer tendons, I guess. I myself have not explored cannibalism.
No,
it's one of those kinks I just haven't hit. I'll get to it. I'll get to cannibalism, but a lot of diseases.
I need a new job now.
you don't want to eat human sushi.
Right.
Tell you that. No okay. Human sushi. Make sure if you're eating a person, very
cooked?
Well cooked. Yeah. Because all the stuff moves right across, right? All the viruses and
sure.
stuff.
All now, the
what
bioavailability.
Happens in species that are cannibals, like crickets and stuff? Do they have, like, special antibodies built in so they...
No, I believe they kill themselves by doing that. I think it's really bad for them.
It's bad for them?
It's bad for them, yeah.
But they still do it.
They still do it.
Because it's a kick.
No one's told them.
Has it popped
Someone
up?
Should warn the crickets.
Has it popped up that Lawrence O'Donnell...
No, not yet.
Okay, well, they're still working on it. We'll get Lawrence O'Donnell on the phone.
We will eventually.
You know, out here, and this is kind of New York news, too,
right.
Avenue Q... Yep. Is closing.
Yeah.
You know, Steve Wynn did this huge push to bring a Broadway show right out. Was it off Broadway or Broadway?
Broadway show.
I saw it on Broadway. Good show. Good show. Although you could see the puppet guys. You could see the guys manipulating the puppets.
I'm not sure they were trying to hide.
A couple guys holding.
Might have been lost on you.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just Sesame Street with a few gay jokes.
Okay.
But it's okay. You know, I'm not a big puppet guy.
Well, I like Sesame Street though. So
do you?
I do.
I never did. I guess maybe I'm too old for it or something.
Okay. You think? You already knew all your numbers and letters by the time it came out.
Most
didn't
of
you?
Them.
Okay.
When it hits QRS, right around there, I get confused. I did filing once for Scientology.
Right.
I was in Boston, and I was hitchhiking, and I didn't have any money. And they offered me lunch if I went and took a Scientology IQ and personality test.
Did you pass?
I was 18 years old. Did very well.
Good.
Very, very well. And it made it very clear, this test, that I was very smart and had huge potential and could marry a model and dance on a couch with Oprah. All that came out in it. But I had some engrams that were working against me. And so the Thetans?
I don't even know what you're talking about, man.
No one does. Talk about Scientology!
Well, you have a lot more Scientology information.
Yeah, well, Thetans are the overlords from the planet Glickblop that came down and told L. Ron Hubbard, there's money in this religion thing. There's a lot of money in this religion thing. But I actually went in order to have lunch, and I took this test, and then they told me that I had to... spend a lot of money, and I told them that I didn't have any money at all.
You were there for a free lunch, and they still tried to get money out of you?
Yeah, they did. So they said I could work instead. So
that's good.
So they had me file.
Yeah.
So my job...
They discovered that you didn't actually know the alphabet.
My job...
Sure?
Well, I don't know. I guess I can go into this. What harm is it going to do? What's Scientology going to do to me, right? I was a little bit upset. I thought that maybe that their religion was jive.
Maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Well, at 18, you know.
But sure. I was open to it. I read Dianetics. You know,
sure.
I did the stuff and just went, oh, I don't know. But they said I could have my lunch. They kept holding the lunch. I think they put a stick on the back of my head, and then hanging off it was like a corned beef sandwich.
Okay.
So I kept moving forward. And they said that I could... I'm echoing. Is that because of getting Lawrence O'Donnell
on? Could be, yeah.
I don't know. They would... what are you doing? What are you waving at?
I'm just waving at the guys on the TV.
Okay.
See if
anyway,
we can find out what's going on.
I'm trying to tell a story here. Are you guys working feverishly to get Lawrence O'Donnell on the phone? Good. Oh, he's on the line. Good, thanks. I went to the Scientology thing, and okay. They put me in charge of filing for a whole afternoon if I wanted my sandwich.
In charge of it? Were there a lot of other filers?
Okay, I wasn't in charge of filing. I was filing.
Okay.
I was at the lowest level possible, which I think is anti-pre-thetan was what I was. I was lousy with engrams.
Right.
I was maggoty with all sorts of bad science stuff. And I filed, but the way I did the filing for Scientology was at random. I didn't use the alphabet. I move folders from one thing to another. So if you're anti-Scientology, I was doing my little blows against the Empire.
Right.
But now I've been told Lawrence O'Donnell is on the line. So why don't you give him an introduction here, Michael Godot?
Lawrence O'Donnell is calling directly from the Royal Hawaiian. Since opening in 1927, the Royal Hawaiian's unique blend of Moorish, Spanish design, and stunning pink coral stucco has made it the most celebrated landmark on Waikiki Beach. Good morning, Lawrence O'Donnell.
Are you there, Lawrence?
Yeah, I'm here. I can hear you.
He is.
Did you hear the whole thing, the whole introduction?
I'm in my pink bathrobe.
The hotel is pink.
The sheets are pink. The bathrobes are pink. It's pink heaven here. You would love it.
It's the pink palace of the Pacific.
That's correct.
Now, you clearly told me when I called you before we went on the air that you would be naked during this interview.
Under the bathrobe, that's absolutely true.
Okay, Lord. So you're in Waikiki writing West Wing?
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm here to give a speech tomorrow to a big convention. But yeah, I actually have a West Wing script that's due this afternoon, so I am multitasking here in Hawaii.
I don't know if I should tell you this. I shouldn't be the one to tell you this, but the damn show has been canceled.
Yeah, that's true. It's not so much canceled as it is a completed work. So we have about 8 more episodes to broadcast Sundays at 8 on NBC, and episode 22, the season finale and the series finale, will be in mid-May, and mm-hmm. we got a bunch of other stories to tell before that.
Now, if you pimp this hard enough and it gets really successful, they've already canceled that. Isn't that counterproductive?
You know, when you're in TV, you cannot stop saying Sundays at 8 on NBC. you say it, you know, between your first and last name. It's just you just do it until they throw, you know, dirt on your coffee.
Now, our producer here, you know how follower I am of the West Wing. You know, I love that.
Never missed a minute.
Never missed a minute. I love that. Love that liberal porn. I just love it. But our producer, when I told him we were going to have you on, he got all jelly legged and said, "Alan Alda or Jimmy Smith, who wins? Tell us."
That's right. We're running a presidential campaign. Jimmy Smith is the Democrat. Alan Alda is the Republican, and it's become really intense. I think everybody just presumed that on the West Wing, you know, the Democrat was going to win. Certainly when we introduced Jimmy Smits as a candidate, but then when we introduced Alan Alda as a candidate, his popularity surged, and so we really have an audience out there that genuinely doesn't know which way this is going to go. I can tell you secretly, you can't mm-hmm. tell anybody this,
sure.
that we just decided who wins this election a few weeks ago, and that script is just being filmed right now.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
So you know.
But we really didn't know ourselves until the very, very last minute in the writing process who was going to win this election.
Now you know. So now you are being cagey, aren't you?
Yeah, this is me being cagey now.
Did you guys vote in the writer's room?
Yes. And we were voting all year. The conversation was going back and forth. And actually, the decision, you know, because we're wishy-washy, you know, Hollywood writers, the decision was actually made several times. You know, like any adult decision. So there was a decision made actually in July about who was going to win. Then there was a different decision made in September about who was going to win. And if you get the DVD set, which I urge you to do, of this last season when it comes out next year, one of the things that we should do in the DVD comments is point out that this particular script was written when Alan Alda was going to win. And this particular script was written when Jimmy Smits was going to win. And you'll see that that just keeps changing throughout the year.
Now, were you a were you a Republic or were you a Democracy? Was it
a Smithian?
Did you assign?
It was very Democratic. It's really strange. You know, the show is run by John Wells, who also runs ER and is one of the real great TV moguls.
And is a very well-known benevolent despot.
Yeah, and it's shocking how Democratic he is. I mean, it amazes me that he will listen to any writer's notion about how to do this. And that's not normal in mogul land. You know, he could have just said at the outset, this is what I want to do, let's do this. And he could have just decided the voting at any point in time, and he didn't. He just let us keep voting and keep changing our minds and keep being fickle about it, and only sort of hammered us into final focus in January.
Now, I know you very well. I know that you must have been pushing for Alan Alda, right?
This is where I think we really... I have to go Cheney on you at this point. I really think that this is a slippery slope of revelation about how it turned out. Now, here's what I think we could have a lot of fun with, is once that episode is broadcast, discussing how that all came about.
Okay, you see how he manipulates me?
He does.
I'm putty in his hands. But is Alan Alda, because I don't watch your stupid show, is Alan Alda still an atheist character on the show?
Well, yeah, he's a Republican politician who does not believe in God, and I came up with that idea because we're interested in getting each one of these campaigns in trouble along the way, and I was trying to think, okay, what's the worst problem that this guy could have? And you don't want to do Lewinsky, you don't want to do stuff that you've seen. And I just realized the worst problem a Republican candidate could have is some issue of not being close enough to God. And which is to say, not being close enough to Jesus Christ, because I think the Republican candidate would have a serious problem if he was an Orthodox Jew, for example. Mm-hmm. But I realized that that would be a real problem, and so we got into the question of reporters starting to ask him, you know, how often he goes to church, and he can't really answer that question, and that was a situation we developed for him last season, and it turned out to be a really interesting road to go, and we ended up having a discussion on the show about God and politics, religion and politics in America, that was more interesting than any discussion I've heard on TV about it. And people in the first couple of years of the West Wing used to say, gee, those policy discussions on the West Wing, those debates are so... I'm hearing some people talking, and I don't know if everyone else is.
They're not outside your hotel room in Hawaii, are they?
No. No, I thought okay. I was hearing them anyway. But anyway, I used to think that the policy discussions on the West Wing were actually not as good as the policy discussions on Meet the Press. But now I think in the last year or two, they've actually become, in many instances, more interesting discussions than you hear on TV talk shows about politics. At least that's the angle I'm going to be selling to my audience here in Hawaii tomorrow for big money.
Okay. Now, you wanted to get off the subject of who won, Alan or Jimmy, and you said you wanted to go Cheney and kind of duck it. So why don't you go Cheney and duck it?
I looked at a photograph on the New York Times website of Harry Whittington leaving the hospital today. Uh-huh. And I am looking at the bruises and the buckshot wounds in his face, on the right side of his face. He's got his nice white shirt on and his necktie tied, and that, I think, does look like the end of this particular story. The guy is walking out of the hospital today, doing a very graceful press conference in front of the hospital, looking reasonably healthy for a 78-year-old guy who got shot.
Now, you were the first that I heard. I don't know if you were the first nationally to say that Cheney was clearly drunk.
Hold it. That would be a bold assertion based on no facts. I simply did the only thing I could do, which was to ask the question, was Cheney drunk? Uh-huh. Now, we're never going to know the answer to that because the vice president made sure we would never know the answer to that because he did what everyone does, if they can, when they're drunk in an accident. They leave the scene and they don't talk to the cops till the next day. Uh-huh. Now, if he was drunk, he handled this absolutely brilliantly. If he was completely sober, he handled it like a complete moron who has no idea how the national press reacts to things. So your choice in this is not so much was Cheney drunk or sober, but was Cheney a moron about the way he handled this, or was Cheney very smart?
Wow.
Now, you have been close to political figures, okay?
Yes, I have.
And you have been in those rooms deciding what gets done in a crisis situation. If you just had your guy shoot another guy in the face during a hunting accident, what are the other reasons, besides your guy being faced, that would make you wait 18 hours before reporting it?
Well, but the reason I posed the question was Cheney drunk is that I, for one, cannot think of another rational reason for delaying. Now, the other reasons, you know, would be crazy. I think that are absolutely nuts, you know, that he did it on purpose or, you know, all sorts of things. But I think one issue here is exactly how close was this guy, you know, to Cheney. And we'll never know because there's no ballistics evidence in the case. And all we have is these people saying, well, he wasn't very close. You know, he was 30 yards away. But, you know, if he was really, really close to him, I think that would start to inform the question of was Cheney drunk or sober. It's one thing if someone's 30 yards away from you. It's a completely different thing if that person is 5 yards away from you. And so that's the kind of fact we're never going to know.
He did say he had a beer, which...
He only said that after 24 hours of interest in the question of was he drunk after I posed that question. And, you know, what I did with it was I posted the question on the Huffington Post website. And the great thing about websites now is what their real function is to tell the mainstream media how to frame the story and how to ask the question. So that by the time Cheney went public and did his Brit Hume interview, Brit Hume at Fox News had to ask him about was he drinking and were other people drinking, and no one was asking that question prior to me asking that question.
I want you to hear Godot's comment on the one beer with lunch.
My understanding of politicians is if he had had no drinks at all, he would say no drinks. If he had 100 drinks, if he had one beer, he would say I had no drinks. If he was drunk, he would say, I had one beer. Because it just seems to me that they, the scale on their responses is just way, way off.
So I mean, saying one beer
means drunk to me from a politician.
Michael Goudeau is very good at this. Very good. One beer thing, I got to say, it's a very strange comment. It is, and you're right, in a politician in this kind of situation, what you're looking for is absolutes. And anything less than an absolute is a very suspicious answer. And so, I think what Cheney knows is there's a bunch of people on this hunt, and they're not all controllable. This is not like Chappaquiddick, where Ted Kennedy, everybody who was there was either in the employ of Ted Kennedy or previously in the employ of Ted Kennedy, and they were going to be loyal to him for life on whatever his story about Chappaquiddick was going to turn out to be. This is different. This is a case where you had guys on horses, local Texas guys, who were doing the real hunting. They were the ones who were going out there, the outriders, finding the actual semi-crippled birds to shoot at. And there were all sorts of drivers, there were all sorts of people who were not in the Secret Service and were not friends of Cheney, who were there as basically service workers on this hunt. And if you lie about the beer thing, let's say Cheney had 6 beers at lunch. If he says, I never had anything to drink at lunch, a month from now, 2 years from now, one of those people on that hunt might say, well, he was drinking beer. So Cheney, I think, protected himself by saying one beer. Uh-huh. That will cover any testimony anyone wants to give down the road about the notion of him drinking beer or multiple beers at the lunch.
Elodie, we have to take a little break now. The phone number here is 866-313-FREE, if that's 3733, or penradio@gmail.com if you want to talk to Lawrence O'Donnell about anything. I want to get to Kiki Friedman and the cartoons and, of course, the beautiful Royal Hawaiian with Lawrence O'Donnell Jr. on the Penn Jillette Show. Mike Gudoza. Donald Jr. on the phone from the Royal Hawaiian, talking about, he's been talking about Dick Cheney. And you're still there, right, Elodie?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
All right.
We have a Gmail that just came in.
Steve.
That you're going to want to quote, I think. Go ahead, read the Gmail from Steve.
There's only one line on it, and it says, one gigantic beer.
Well, that, you know, that was Letterman's joke last night. He said he had one beer, and then he pulled out the can of beer, and it was like one of these giant beers.
So Steve's ripping off Letterman.
Steve, you weasel.
I want you to talk. You were on what, the McLaughlin Group?
The McLaughlin Group, which is the longest running political argument chat show on TV, and it's the one that everyone has stolen their formats from, and it's the most fun I have in makeup.
And what did you say about the Muslims and the cartoons?
Yeah, the cartoon thing came up on last week's show, and when it fell to me to address the nation and the world on this subject, I refused to, on the grounds that I would fear for my life if I said what I thought. And I felt within that, you get a feeling of where I am on this subject.
Yeah.
That's about as far as I'm willing to go publicly, and I hope you do not attempt to drag me into any public discussion of cartoon riots, because my position is I'm in favor of them.
Well,
I feel that's the safe position. I feel that's the only place you can go and survive scrutiny in that part of the world.
I saw a great T-shirt on T-shirt Hell, one of those
t-shirt
places.
T-shirthell.com.
Had an amazing T-shirt that I just thought summed up the whole thing. On the front of the T-shirt, it said, on the back of this T-shirt is a caricature of Muhammad. And on the back of the T-shirt, it said, just kidding, please don't kill me, praise Allah.
I think that's about where I am. I wouldn't even dare wear that T-shirt. I wouldn't trust them to be patient enough to look at the back. You know, because I believe it's against their religion to look at the back. You know, I think all they need to do is see that front side and you're dead.
Right, because then they might be taking a chance of seeing a
depiction. Yeah, because it's a blasphemous thing that's on your back, so they can't look at that.
Sure. Now, there's an editorial in the New York Times today that says that we do condone rioting in the West, and we do condone it, and it does have an important function. And he kind of says, he doesn't say this outright, I don't want to quote him out of context because it would be unfair, but he kind of says that maybe the Watts riots and the racial riots in the 60s were kind of responsible for television being more sensitive to African Americans, that helped get Amos and Andy off the TV and so on, so that we're perfectly okay with that kind of overreaction. We just don't respect the Muslims enough.
Yeah, just to be clear, it's not an editorial for those of us in the press who care about this. It's an op-ed piece. The
right.
Editorial board of the New York Times has not said this. The op-ed piece is written by Robert Wright, and it is, I think, possibly the stupidest thing written on the subject so far. First of all, we have never had a riot in the United States that is comparable to these religious riots based on cartoons. The Watts riots were directly traced to, and this is what the Kerner Commission found, that investigated every so-called race riot in the United States in the 1960s, that every one of those riots was the result specifically of a police use of deadly force or police brutality, a specific government police action against black people in those neighborhoods. That's what those neighborhoods were rising up against, specifically. They were not in any way reacting to a cartoon published anywhere. So the provocations, whether you find them justifiable or not, for these two different kinds of riots are completely different, and there is no conceivable sane way of drawing a comparison between the two.
Now, he also says that the equivalent would be to have a cartoon of Jesus with his crown of thorns being dynamite after after an abortion bombing. I think that's a really good comparison.
It is. Hugh Hewitt, who's a very conservative, very, very pro-Republican talk show host, came up with that comparison, a radio talk show. I think it's a great comparison in terms of the actual cartoon. Now, what we can say is, I promise you that no violence would result in the United States if you did that cartoon tomorrow. Because Christianity is filled with many different sects who have many different reactions to this. And the fact is, when you consider that there are millions upon millions upon millions of evangelical Christians in the United States who firmly believe, along with millions of other Catholics and millions of other kinds of Christians in this country, that every single abortion is a first-degree murder, the exact equivalent of a first-degree murder. When you consider that they believe that, their control of themselves is stunning. The fact that some tiny single-digit number of lunatics who believe that have shot at and killed physicians who perform abortions is actually kind of amazing. Now, this is not to be, this is, I'm not in any way suggesting any acceptance on my part of this, but think of this, of the numbers here. You've got probably a minimum of 50 million Americans, a minimum of 50 million, who firmly believe that abortion is the equivalent of first-degree murder. And you have a single-digit number of people in the history of this controversy who've ever picked up a gun and shot somebody to stop that murder. Now, so we know exactly what the reaction would be in the United States to that cartoon. People would say that Jesus Christ cartoon with the dynamite and his crown of thorns is outrageous and it's awful and it's unrepresentative of Christianity. And most people in the country would think that that's true. And then we'd all turn the page of the newspaper and read the sports section.
Well, we've had proof of that with South Park. South Park has Jesus lampooned as a character on probably at least a dozen shows, and that's on Comedy Central going out to the whole country. And there have been, I asked Trey Parker and Matt Stone how many death threats they got, you know, how many bounties of $1 million were put on them by Christians for this, and the number of death threats that Trey and Matt get are the same number that we get for our show on Showtime, which is next to none, and those that we do get are considered by the police we talk to be insignificant, not real threats. You know,
yeah, I mean, not
we don't get any real significant threats.
Yeah, not to mention, you know, no one got shot and killed on the stage of Godspell or Jesus Christ Superstar, which by Muslim standards would be absolutely blasphemous.
But isn't there a difference? Because not only do Christians allow the depiction of their God, Jesus Christ, but they seem to have a fetish about it. I mean, you can't walk into a Catholic church without being lousy with him hanging on the crosses all over. But the Muslim faith actually says you cannot depict him. That itself is a sin. Doesn't that make a difference?
It does, but those are, but not depicting Muhammad is a religious belief. And so, you know, religious beliefs are simply what they are. They're religious beliefs. And I won't get into the business of criticizing one religious belief over another.
Oh, me neither.
But what Robert Wright is correct about in his op-ed piece is that there's a tremendous amount of self-censorship in this country in regards to Jesus Christ and Christianity in general. That's absolutely true. That part of his piece is true, but the rest of it is just absurd beyond description.
That I'm a nut about this. I don't like to use the word censorship unless the government's involved. Because another word for self-censorship is simply taste. You know, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't go into the Penn and Teller show because we don't want it there. And our reasons are our business because it's our damn show. And I think the same thing with newspapers. The fact that, other people say what our taste should be is still not censorship. It's only when there's actually a mandate from the government that I'm comfortable using that word.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's but you know, so But there's a great deal of sensitivity about references to Jesus Christ and in American culture. That's absolutely mm-hmm. true. But to compare it in any way to the cartoon riots that we've seen is demented.
I like the word cartoon riots, though.
Yeah, cartoon riots are great.
The cartoon wars.
And what happened with, because you follow the news so much more carefully, we'll do this. I want to talk to you afterwards about what happened with them saying they were going to do Holocaust cartoons. Did those come out or whatever? What do you think about that? I also want to talk to you about Kinky Friedman and his chances of being governor of Texas, and we'll do that right after this. 866-313-FREE if you want to talk to Lawrence O'Donnell Jr., Michael Goudeau, or Penn Jillette on Free FM. This is Penn Jillette. We're here with Lawrence O'Donnell Jr. from Hawaii. Lawrence O'Donnell Jr., as you all know, is the father of Elizabeth O'Donnell, one of my favorite little kids, one of my inspirations for having Moxie, was his wonderful relationship with his beautiful and terrific daughter. And now that I've said nice things about you, LOD, we're going to open up the phones. Are you there?
A couple of emails.
I am there. I love the phones.
Okay. Well, first, let's do a couple of emails.
Sure. We have one that says, Republican atheist, you got to be kidding me. I have to start watching the show now to see how they're pulling this off.
Now, I just
read excited about that.
I just read an interesting thing the other day that the Democrats are the more religious of the two parties. Is that correct?
Well, listen, the Democrats politicized churches long before Republicans. It is taken for granted that every Democratic candidate for president will spend a very significant amount of time in the pulpits of black churches in America. And nobody looks at that as the politicization of Jesus Christ and the politicization of Christianity and the politicization of religion, which it most certainly is. Democrat candidates for president campaign in churches far more than Republicans.
So there you go. So this is this isn't as far out as possible. You think we could have a Republican atheist candidate? You think that's possible?
I think there are Republican atheists. I think there are Republican atheists holding office in the United States. I think there are atheists in the Democratic Party holding office in the United States, and neither one of them will ever admit it.
Ever.
Ever. Never. Never.
Not even in like the next 10, 20 years?
No. We're never going to get to that.
Never.
Okay. Never, of course, means in my lifetime.
Okay. We got another Gmail for you. This is just to clear up some history.
Yeah, this guy says the 4 days of riots following the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King were not in response to a specific use of deadly force by police, unless you believe the authorities killed Martin Luther King.
You know, my memory is I don't have a memory of 4 days of riots following Martin Luther King.
Well, we're just taking it on his word.
Someone better Google that while the show's still on. I don't think there was very much, if any, significant rioting after the assassination of King. I could be wrong. However, let's just for the moment parenthetically go with the notion that there was.
Okay.
That is a different provocation than a cartoon about Martin Luther King.
Yes.
So that, if there was rioting as a result of that, that rioting was based on a violent interaction with the black community. But I know there wasn't rioting in Boston where I lived, and I know there was fear of it at the time, but I actually don't think you're going to find there was a great deal of rioting or really significant rioting after the assassination of Martin Luther King.
Okay, here's what you've been waiting for, LOD. We're going to the phones. Mel, you're on line 5. Can you put them on there, New York? Can you take care of both Mel and LOD?
There's a chance of that. Mel, are you there?
I hear Mel.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hey, how you doing, boss? What's up? What are you going to say?
Not too bad. Listen, I was just on my way to McDonald's, actually, for lunch, listening to you guys on the radio. I just had a couple of comments for the political gentleman, or the guy that was
LOD.
With the politicians, like you had said before, with Cheney shooting the gentleman in the face.
Yeah.
Couldn't we take that as a metaphor for the administration, you know, shooting the country in the face, for one? Two is the other thing that you guys were saying about religion and Republican atheists.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I could be, you know, naive a little bit, but aren't church and state supposed to be separate? And if so, how is the moral majority ruling the nation, you know? And I just don't understand how we all follow as lemmings, knowing that this whole thing is, you know, going on. We all laugh at Bush and laugh, and but our whole, you know, we were embarrassed globally.
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there in the liberal blogosphere who are saying that the Cheney shooting is representative and symbolic of the way the administration deals with things generally. I don't really care about that particular frame of it, because the Cheney shooting in and of itself is just so fascinating and just so much fun, and it's so worth exploring in its own context. The issue of the separation of church and state, if you'd been watching The West Wing, Sundays at 8, there was a great moment, I believe written by Lawrence O'Donnell Jr., where Martin Sheen, as president, is in a conversation about this, and somebody says, you know, whatever happened to the separation of church and state, and he right. says, that's hanging in there pretty good, but there is no separation of church and politics, and there never has been. And that's really what you're seeing in the United States, is that you will see God invoked in campaigning all the time, and you'll see Democrats campaigning in black churches and Republicans appealing on religious grounds to people in campaigning. But our Constitution and our laws about separation of church and state are hanging in there awfully good, and better than anywhere else in the world.
Well, thanks a lot, Mel.
Cool. Thanks, Mel. Wow.
Let's take line 12, New York. Let's see what Brian can do with Lawrence O'Donnell.
Oops, we've lost Brian. I'm sorry.
We lost Brian. Okay. Let's go on line 6.
Well, that was like he was humming there.
you got line 6?
Sure.
Hello?
We have Dimitri on line 6.
Yeah, how you doing, man? This is Penn.
Hey, Penn. How's it going?
Wonderful.
I love your show.
Thanks so much, man.
What do you got? I wanted to, like, touch the subject of what you talked about earlier. About how they believe that abortion is exactly equivalent to first-degree murder.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, I think everybody thinks like that, because we live in a society that is, like, is vague and simplified, and everything, if it's leaning towards murder, then it's murder, or if it's leaning towards not murder, then it's not murder, and things like that. I follow, like, the philosophy of vague logic, how everything is to some degree, like, yeah, to some degree it is murder because it is a living cell, but to some degree it isn't because it's not really a person yet, you know?
Well, I think Lawrence was just, you were just talking about church doctrine. You were just saying that there are people that believe that. He wasn't talking about why or how rational it is to believe that. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's true. It is, I would say, a belief that I respect. And it's not a belief that I share, but it is definitely a belief that I respect.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that even with religion and the way we handle everything, it's that everything's taken to either an extreme yes or an extreme no. No, no one says, like, yeah, sure, I mean, to some degree it was, to some degree it wasn't. And,
well, you know, I think you're
right.
I think you're right. I think the American voter generally tends to think the way you're thinking. They don't tend to see things in black and white. Especially on an issue like abortion. They think there's a little something wrong with it that bothers them, and then they think there's a lot of practical necessity for keeping it available. You know, and the same thing with all the issues like taxation. You know, when one guy says, running for office, I'm going to cut your taxes, and the other guy says, I won't, they feel like the guy who's in favor of cutting the taxes probably won't raise them as much as the other guy. And so they're really doing a set of judgments about what the person is saying that is less black and white than what the candidate would like them to be doing.
But I would also argue that when you're dealing with moral issues and not politics, black and white is perfectly acceptable. I mean, the idea that everything is shades of gray may be okay for sociological reasons, but for an individual, you can decide that life begins at conception and that killing a life is wrong, and you can have that black and white. There's no heroics in saying everything is gray. You are allowed to have a strong opinion. Now, Lawrence tends to deal with things in political terms and what you can get away with and what you can't, but an individual having a black and white view of many issues, I really applaud.
It's It's also the way I live my life, what I can get away with and what I can't. I have a very careful evaluation of that 24 hours a day.
Okay, we're going to take a let's take one more call, but I definitely want to get to talking about Kinky Friedman. So this may be a pretty quick call. Let's take Paul on line 5 because he has this. He wants to talk to you about Bush and Clinton. How about that, Lawrence?
Are you on there, Paul?
You there, Paul? Did Paul go away on line 5?
So is he still here on my screen?
I'm here.
There he is.
How you doing, man?
Hey, guys. How you
Paul
doing?
Falling asleep. Good. Hey, Paul.
What Talk, Paul.
I'm on a speakerphone. I apologize for the bad connection, but I have a question for you.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm just curious what you think about why you think Bush is able to get away with getting caught essentially in this lie over why we're at war right now as opposed to Clinton. And I am... you know, a fan of Clinton and very much not a fan of Bush, but my politics are not what's behind this question. I'm curious more about what you think about how the country lets Bush get away with this while Clinton got in so much trouble for lying about adultery.
Go ahead, Lawrence.
Well, you know, look, I've never seen a president who didn't lie a great deal. And so it's very hard for me to measure how much one lies against the other. Clinton's lies just turned out to be laughably, provably obvious. You know, DNA, for example, is not a thing you want to be trying to get your lie to work against. And so, you know, Bush, I don't know exactly what he's lied about. There's a lot of people on the left who want to tell you that he lied about weapons of mass destruction. I'm not someone who believes that. I believe that the president believed that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. I think he firmly believed that, as Bill Clinton believed it, by the way. And what we're left with is, given the fact that there wasn't, how has this administration dealt with that? And they've dealt with it in a way that actually allows you to go back and think they were lying about it in the first place, because they haven't dealt with it in a way that is very direct and owns up to it. They've dealt with it by changing their story several times about why they went into Iraq in the first place. And so, you know, their lying is I think a normal level of presidential lying. Normally a president is not lying about who he had sex with in the Oval Office. That's not a normal area of inquiry for presidents.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Paul. I want to get to this in the last couple of minutes here. Our good friend, Kinky Friedman. You've never met Kinky, have you?
I have not, no.
Yeah. He's a great American. He's a great guy. One of the few people who was very close friends with both Bushes and Clinton. I mean, Bush calls him up on the phone just to chat, and so did Clinton. He's a wonderful character. You know, he was Kinky Friedman of the Texas Jew Boys, and he is running for governor. And when he talked to us on the show a couple weeks ago, he was talking about being about 21 in the polls.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's also being covered on the Country Music Channel, I guess it is, in a documentary on his
tonight,
campaign.
It's Go
a great
Kinky
article
Ellen.
About it in today's New York Times. Everyone should look at online.
You got 1 minute, sir.
And you know, he's. Look, he's running in a country where Jesse Ventura was elected governor. He's running
in
a country where my friend Al Franken is going to be running for Senate in Minnesota in the same year. He's running in a country where we are told at birth that anyone can grow up to be governor of Texas. And so I'm not here to bet against him.
How about when he says stuff like believe in Jesus or go to hell, and my car is a Jewish car, it'll stop on a dime and pick it up. Can you get away with making those kind of good-natured religious jokes?
This is why he is so valuable to us. He's the only person who can get away with making those jokes. He's incredible. I mean, they are really funny. And you get the spirit of them even when you read them in print in the New York Times.
Lawrence O'Donnell, I got to cut you off here.
Okay.
Lawrence O'Donnell, we're going
to
do another show with Lawrence
we
really soon. Okay, this is Penn Jillette in Las Vegas on Free FM.